Thank you very much for being here. We'll have today a talk about an important issue, a hot topic, I think, across the country, poverty reduction strategies. Most provinces in Canada, the vast majority of them, have adopted poverty reduction strategy, or they are in the process of doing so. Saskatchewan is a bit of a laggard in that area, but I hope that things might change in the near future. There's certainly a lot of discussion about this issue, and we are really glad to have Chuck Plante here today to discuss this important issue. The title of his talk is Comprehensive Poverty Reduction Strategies in Canada, Policy or Window Dressing. Chuck Plante is a founding member of Upstream, Institute for a Healthy Society, which is based here in Saskatoon. He currently serves as the organization's policy director. Recently was responsible for calculating the widely cited $3.4 billion cost of poverty estimates for Saskatchewan. You may have heard of this in the newspapers or on television. He's currently working on the poverty cost final report, which will be available next month. So look out for this report, which should be out soon. Chuck holds an MA in sociology with a specialization in social statistics from McGill University, where he continues to study as a PhD candidate in sociology. His PhD research traces and evaluates the emergence of the new social investment approach to social policy and the welfare state in Canada and the US. With some colleagues at McGill, he's also working on a book manuscript. I think he recently completed this manuscript, which compares Quebec's poverty reduction efforts of the last 20 years to efforts in BC, Alberta, and Ontario, among other jurisdictions. Today, Chuck will address the issue of poverty reduction strategies, and we thank him again for accepting to speak to us about this important matter. The talk will last less than an hour, hopefully, no more than an hour, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions, comments, and discussion. Chuck, it's all yours.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. It's a real honor. It's exciting to see so many faces interested in poverty reduction in our province, in both of our major cities. So my presentation today, as Danielle introduced, is Comprehensive Poverty Reduction Strategies in Canada, Policy or Window Dressing. Over the course of this talk, I'm going to talk a little bit. I'm going to open up by talking about what poverty is to kind of bring us all on the same page. To talk about the current state. I'm going to review briefly the current state of poverty in Saskatchewan. Oh, a little bit closer, guys. Sorry, I'm not used to talking with this much technology. It's kind of exciting. But it might take me a while to get coordinated. I'm going to talk a little bit about what a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy is. I'm going to talk about whether the bulk of the talk is really going to focus on exploring this idea of whether or not comprehensive poverty reduction strategies are actually effective at reducing poverty in our country and in the provinces that have enacted them. Towards the end, I'm going to consider a debate or a discussion that's being had around comprehensive poverty reduction strategies and the role of comprehensive poverty reduction strategies, whether they're policy and that they reduce poverty, or whether they're compasses to guide policy, or whether they're just window dressing. When we say window dressing, it just sort of implies that provinces that enact them, the provinces that already probably would have done well on poverty reduction anyways. And then finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about whether or not Saskatchewan should have a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. I lean towards the yes camp, and so I'll probably make that case a little bit. So my goals for you guys by the end of this is that I want you guys to come away with a clear idea of what a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy is, if you don't already have an idea in mind. I want to bring you up to speed on a couple of the comprehensive poverty reduction strategies that have been implemented in Canada. I'll talk mostly about Quebec because that's the one that I'm most familiar with, based on the work that Danielle mentioned before. I want you to have a feel also for what makes a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy successful, or what can make a poverty reduction strategy successful. And hopefully by the end of it, I want you feeling a little bit optimistic about the prospect of a comprehensive poverty reduction for Saskatchewan. So I might slip into calling a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy a CPRS at some point during this talk, because a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy is a bit of a mouthful. You'll see on my slides that I use CPRS throughout. Otherwise, I would just have slides saying comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. It pretty much takes up a whole slide. I should open by maybe introducing the organization that I work for, which is called Upstream Institute for a Healthy Society, and connect that a little bit with poverty. Some of you may not be familiar with us. In general, Upstream's goal is to create a healthy society with evidence-based, people-centered ideas. For us right now, this means closing the gap between public knowledge and expert knowledge of the social determinants of health. The last 15 or 20 years have seen an explosion of knowledge around this area. The idea that people's health is more determined by their social situation, by things like income and education and community connections, than by things like nutrition and exercise, which are commonly associated with health. Poverty, of course, is a foremost determinant of health, and I'll come back to that in a little bit. But that brings Upstream. That's the connection of Upstream and poverty in this presentation. So let's open by talking a little bit about what poverty is. When I think about poverty, and hopefully you guys will agree with me, in my mind, poverty is different from inequality. It's different from inequality in the sense that poverty is not just having less. Poverty is having so little that it actually prevents you from having more. It's having so little that it actually results in you slipping into vicious cycles that result in you having less simply because you had less before. In extreme cases, can lead to less leading to less, or misfortune leading to misfortune. There's a couple of mechanisms by which poverty, or having a lack of income or resources, can lead to these vicious cycles. One is the literal deterioration of the person. This is very intuitive to us when we think about poor countries, that if you don't have enough food, for example, your body deteriorates, and that can have short-term as well as long-term and lasting consequences for you. However, in rich countries, but even in poor countries, there are other aspects of the person that are at threat of deteriorating when we become poor. For example, our skills, our human capital could deteriorate, but so could our cultural capital, especially our social networks. I have a colleague at McGill that researches how when people fall into poverty, sometimes they're forced to move to a different neighborhood, and how that shock can dramatically reduce their opportunities. Poverty can also cause precautionary behavior. It's a fancy economic term, but basically it means something like hoarding. It means not taking what would otherwise be very advantageous risks and taking advantage of very advantageous opportunities, because there's a small threat of basically personal annihilation or severe deterioration. So, you know, if you're in fairly sound financial straits and you want to go back to school, you know, there's a risk that maybe school won't pay off the way you want it to. But if it doesn't, you'll still be able to keep your house, or you'll still be able to put your kids through college. But if you're very, very poor, that same educational decision could threaten you with not having enough. If it doesn't go well, could end up with you not having enough money to pay the bills, not having enough money to support your kids in college, not having enough to feed yourself. And so often, so when people have to make these types of decisions, we call that precautionary behavior. A couple more points about poverty. First is that poverty is complex. It isn't already clear from some of the examples that I've given, or some of my conversation about poverty already, there are a lot of causes of poverty, and they're very different for different people. For some people, poverty is caused by an inability to participate in the labor market. Maybe they're geographically isolated, but maybe they suffer from a disability. Maybe they have family, maybe they have dependents that depend on them and prevent them. So it's important to stress that even though poverty is the state of a vicious cycle, and then we can think of that as a universal concept in people's day-to-day lived experiences of poverty, poverty can be very different, and as a result can demand very different solutions for different people. And finally, the causes of poverty are systematic. I think I got that a little bit by talking about how poverty is a vicious cycle. Misfortune begetting more misfortune. The point is to stress that sometimes misfortune is a result of personal choices that we make. Things become systemic when no amount of choices can, of individual choices can alleviate the situation. And typically what that means is it takes more than individuals to solve those issues, it takes collective, it takes groups of people. So now that we've kind of talked a little bit about poverty, there's different ways of measuring poverty. We typically measure poverty in the income dimension. Different measures of poverty, in Canada we have three dominant measures of low income. We have the LICO, the LIM, and the MBM. I'm not going to go into too much detail about them. But I will say that I'm going to use the MBM for most of this presentation. Later on I'm going to be using a modified LIM, and I'll talk a little bit about it when I get there. The Margaret Basket measure basically asks, what do people need to meet the basic level of subsistence and social functioning in Canada, and it figures out how much that basket of goods costs throughout the country on a region-by-region and city-by-city basis. One of the things that I found interesting working with poverty and poverty numbers over the last 2 years is, even though there's dramatic differences between these measures if you look at them from year to year, over time they more or less tell the same story, or they typically do. You'll see that all three measures, when we look at poverty rates in Saskatchewan, low income rates in Saskatchewan, we'll see that all three measures are telling the same story in recent years, and that's that low income rates in our province are actually declining, or at least they were up until about 2010-2011, which is the most recent year that we have data for. Relatively speaking, Saskatchewan has been doing better than other provinces in recent years. Whenever you're doing interprovincial comparisons around poverty in Canada, the bottom of the barrel is pretty much British Columbia. That posts incredibly high poverty rates for our country. They tend to be a few percentage points ahead of everybody at any given time. Whereas the provinces to beat tend to be Alberta and Quebec, and for very different reasons that we'll talk about later. But Saskatchewan, you know, we used to be a lot closer to British Columbia, but in recent years we've been pulling up against Alberta and Quebec. In many ways, we've begun to look more like Alberta. That's been long covered in the media. You're all very familiar with the Saskatchewan movement. Things are a little less stable when we look at child poverty. Again, Quebec and Alberta are doing much better than the other provinces. However, Saskatchewan has been looking at falling the child poverty rate, which is a very noble thing, and hopefully a trend that will continue. You can see that other provinces like Manitoba have been less fortunate. I've mentioned already that poverty is very, very bad for our health. Corey Dorff is actually here, and Dr. Webster, who's the health disparities asked to report several years ago, did a really great job of connecting poverty and health in our province. A lot of the time, especially when you're doing research in Saskatchewan, you have to draw on research from other provinces and countries to talk about issues here. The work that Corey has been doing and the health region as a whole has been doing to document the relationship between health and poverty in our Saskatchewan has been really valuable, because we actually get to talk about, when we're talking about health poverty, we can actually talk about what it actually looks like here in Saskatchewan and Saskatoon. Among low-income Saskatoonians, income is the greatest single determinant of their health. Poverty leads to greater risk of countless maladies. Everything from mortality and birth rate to suicide, chronic pulmonary injuries, and poisoning, et cetera. This is very much related to what I was talking about earlier about the deterioration of the person that's caused by poverty. Partly as a result of this deterioration, and we can think about this deterioration of person as being an immoral thing. We want to reduce human suffering, and that's something that Upstream talks a lot about. We talk about health being really what our priority should be as a country, as a population. But that deterioration is also incredibly expensive. In the spring, Upstream was privileged, and I, along with Upstream, was privileged to work with a number of community groups and other partners and stakeholders in Saskatoon to put together a poverty costs campaign where we want to raise awareness about the actual costs of poverty, not just to the poor, but to the province as a whole. We estimated that poverty was costing Saskatchewan $3.8 billion a year, or just about 5% of GDP. That was $1.2 billion in heightened service use. So this is increased reliance on health care and the criminal justice system and social assistance. But in addition, picking up on those things I was talking about earlier about vicious cycles, poverty also costs us $2.6 billion a year in missed opportunities, or basically foregone economic opportunities. It's often difficult for people that haven't experienced poverty to understand, but one of the consequences of being poor is that living in poverty tends to prevent people from taking advantage of opportunities that really the most of us take for granted. When we talk, when we think about our own ability or our life courses, what am I going to do next year or the year after that? I can plan ahead. People living in poverty can't take advantage of those same types of steps. Things like going to school, getting a job, keeping a job, etc. The $3.8 billion a year figure is kind of useful because it begins, because if we start talking about the cost of poverty, we can start talking about the solutions to poverty and what would be a viable solution to poverty in a more intelligent way. In theory, $3.8 billion a year as a cost gives us the upper amount of what we could potentially spend in this province to eliminate poverty and justify it from an economic perspective, from a cost-benefit perspective. For these reasons, poverty eradication has become one of the core tenets of 21st century social policy design. The social investment approach is an emergent paradigm for thinking about social policy that's been rising mainly out of Europe, but it's becoming increasingly popular in Canada, at least implicitly, more explicitly in places like Quebec. The social investment approach, people that advocate or talk about the social investment approach, have begun to situate it as a third way of thinking about social policy, not literally the third way, which was the way of thinking about policy in the 90s, but as a third paradigm that's actually different from the previous two, not just the hybridization, after Keynesianism, neoliberalism, social investment. This field is very dynamic and it's emergent, so there's lots of discussion right now defining it, but it's an exciting idea. In summary, the social investment approach aims to identify opportunities for productive social policy. This is how poverty eradication has become such a central tenet, because poverty, by definition, is costly, and so poverty elimination would presumably be justified on the grounds of the stability of the economy, as well as health. In Canada, on the theme around poverty eradication, CPRS, have become the place to start. And so the rest of this presentation is going to talk about CPRS, or Comprehensive Poverty Reduction Strategies. A very brief history of Comprehensive Poverty Reduction Strategies. In the 1980s, governments in Canada committed to the work of eradication of child poverty, and it didn't work out very well. They planned to eradicate poverty by 2000. Didn't happen. In fact, poverty went up throughout most of the 90s. Child poverty went up. In the 2000s, policy-minded people started talking about poverty strategies or plans. CPRS had been promoted in the developing world by the IMF and the World Bank. They've also been applied in Europe. Quebec was the first Canadian province to commit to a CPRS in 2002, and they implemented their first action plan in 2004. This is a very condensed slide. Initially, I thought maybe I could spend a lot more time talking about this, but I decided to try to reduce it to one slide. But I'm going to spend a bit of time on this slide talking about what makes CPRS. As a methodologist who likes to code things, I could have spent my entire presentation talking about what's on this slide, how I think about the different comprehensive poverty reduction strategies in Canada fitting into each one of these categories and subcategories. But generally, CPRS involves meeting five standards. CPRS should have targets and timelines. It should have accountability mechanisms. It should offer comprehensive solutions. It should include equity measures, and it should involve some amount of consultation. Targets and timelines basically set the goal for the Comprehensive Poverty Reduction Strategy. It's how much do we expect to reduce poverty among in the population, maybe child poverty, or among among Aboriginal populations, by what date? Ideally, targets and timelines set on measures. So a province can say, well, we're going to measure that goal by using the LICO, the low income cutoffs, or they're going to use measure it using the market basket measure. A couple of examples of targets that have been set. The province of Newfoundland and Labrador set its goal in 2004, but I'll have a slide later updating the date for you just in case I got it wrong. Committed to taking Newfoundland and Labrador from being one of the least poor, or from being one of the most poor to one of the least poor provinces in Confederation, according to LICO. In 2002, when Quebec committed, they committed to bringing Quebec in line with the least poor industrialized nations on Earth. A couple of years ago, Alberta committed to eliminating child poverty by 2015. Accountability mechanisms are many. Roughly, they're mechanisms that are in place that ensure that somebody or someone is responsible and actually acting on implementing actions to get us towards our goals that we set in our targets and timelines. In some provinces, it's been a minister responsible. In Newfoundland and Labrador, for example, Danny Williams took personal responsibility as the premier. Sometimes it's a committee of ministers. Governments will often pass legislation to keep government account and ensure that if governments change, that the targets and timelines and the comprehensive poverty reduction strategies continue to be acted upon. And finally, independent oversight is something that I'll return to a little bit later. But these are groups that are set up, or maybe already exist, but are tasked with tracking the success of the comprehensive poverty reduction strategy from distance. Groups outside of government, or at least from departments that aren't directly connected to the decision-making on CPRS. Comprehensive solutions relate to the C in CPRS. Earlier I talked about poverty is complex. The point about comprehensivity is one that's been added in the beginning when we talk about poverty reduction strategies. We even began to talk about CPRS. Because of the complexity of poverty, we need to stress that that a poverty reduction strategy to be successful can't just introduce one thing. It has to address a number of dimensions that make up poverty, that determine the complexity of poverty. Sherry Forgeman has detailed at least 10 areas that a good comprehensive poverty reduction strategy should address. And they're listed there. I won't go into it, but it's the usual suspects: affordable housing, early childhood development and care, training, income, disability income, assets. Those of you that are familiar with policy and policy rollout and policy impact will be familiar that even when we implement a universal standard with policy, there are some groups that tend to not benefit the same as the median or modal groups. So a good comprehensive poverty reduction strategy should also pay attention to equity measures. It should make sure that it has systems in place to make sure that its services are able to reach everyone. So in Saskatchewan, but also throughout Canada, this typically means making sure that women are able to access the services, youth, newcomers, and Indigenous populations. Indigenous is particularly important for Saskatchewan. And then finally, comprehensive poverty reduction strategy should also involve some amount of consultation. Consultation is generally at least initial, in the sense that there's generally some kind of public conversation that's had in every province that CPRS has been enacted. The province will have a series of meetings. There's been different formats that have been used in the different provinces. Sometimes stakeholders are asked, like representatives of organizations, but sometimes it's a public call out, and there's town halls and things on the topic. But consultations can also be ongoing. Comprehensive poverty reduction strategies can also set up mechanisms so that the public can provide feedback over the course of the CPRS so that knowledge is constantly accumulated and not just happening right before the next comprehensive poverty reduction strategy is being set up. So here's the timelines of CPRS in Canada. At this point, 8 provinces have committed to comprehensive poverty reduction strategies, and 7 provinces have launched a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. Alberta is right on the cusp of launching theirs. They committed in 2012. Actually, 4 provinces have already are already working on their second comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. The provinces of New Brunswick, Quebec, Ontario, and Manitoba. A couple of those just came out in the last couple of months. I've tried to guesstimate based on policy documents when we should expect comprehensive poverty reduction strategies or second renewals from the provinces, first and second renewals from the provinces that have not yet renewed theirs. Finally, I've highlighted in blue the 4 provinces that have also committed, that have actually structured this and determined a lot of this process around comprehensive poverty reduction strategies to legislation. Quebec really led the way with this, with their act on poverty and social exclusion. It's called the Act of Combat Pauvreté Exclusion Sociale. The order of these things vary from province to province. In Quebec's case, they passed the legislation in 2002, but they actually came out with their action plan in 2004. Manitoba went the other way around. Manitoba came out with an action plan and a commitment a few years before they actually passed legislation. In most of this legislation, there's some commitment to a target, to a timeline, and to a measure, the themes that I was talking about earlier. But a couple of the other things that are really useful in the legislation is it's often the legislation that provinces will say, we're going to renew our comprehensive poverty reduction strategy every 4 years or 5 years, depending on the province. There's going to be this much consultation each time. These are the stakeholders that are going to be consulted. And then finally, this is the person that's going to be responsible. There is a lot of variety in the CPRS that have been enacted in Canada. In fact, there's about as many comprehensive poverty reduction strategies there have been provinces in leadership. I really like to stress that comprehensive poverty reduction strategies are a very nonpartisan policy point. These types of plans have been enacted in the provinces where they've been enacted for by governments of every political stripe that's represented in Canada. I've highlighted a couple of particular comprehensive poverty reduction strategies in that table below because I want to talk about them briefly. The first is Quebec. In fact, the commitment to a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy and the Act to Combat Poverty and Social Exclusion came out of Quebec in 2002 under a Parti Québec Wall leadership, but it was actually a Liberal government that followed through with it and actually put together a plan and set things in motion. And the Liberal government seemed to like it enough that they did it again when it was time to renew the CPRS a few years later, 2010. New Brunswick is also very interesting because even though it was the Liberal government that committed to and created the first action plan, it was the most recent action plan to come out of New Brunswick comes from the progressive conservatives of New Brunswick. In the remainder of the talk, I'm going to focus on this question about what are CPRS supposed to do and are they doing the things that we expect them to do, and review some of the evidence from across the country. This is the stuff that I really get excited about, like the output, the policy evaluation stuff. So, just superficially, a CPRS can be a media stunt. It can create some buzz for elected officials. It can be more or less useful for different parties facing different types of challenges. Alison Redford famously introduced her comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. She was leading into the 2012 election, and she tried to rally the progressive vote against the Wild Rose. It and other policies were part of what ended up becoming a successful election for her. Things didn't go so well after that. CPRS can also be used to build bridges between community and government. I'll talk about that a little bit towards the end, but I won't talk about it too much, so I'll return to that. CPRS should also provide opportunities for policy learning, and by that I mean they should provide us with opportunities to review and evaluate current current policy efforts. They could also help us identify and introduce missing pieces. And I'll talk about that more at length toward the end. But last but not least, ideally, CPRS should reduce poverty. And so I'm going to talk a lot more about that in the middle of the presentation and for the next several slides. Have CPRS reduced poverty? Not surprisingly, all the provinces that have enacted them have claimed success in one way or another. The Daily Bread Food Bank. Daily Beast is a blog, not a different blog. But the Daily Bread Food Bank, which is a food bank in Toronto, has a blog as well. And they've claimed that CPRS with targets and timelines reduce child poverty. This is an off-cited blog post in the field of CPRS. In the next few slides, I'm going to check these claims with a rough and ready regression discontinuity design. I'm not going to go into the details of it or present the specific numbers, but I will present some graphs that illustrate it. One of the things I like, this is overall poverty rates, MBM, and the countries that have enacted CPRS. One of the things that I like about this graph is that it shows the diversity of poverty trajectories in Canada around CPRS. You'll see that I've centered it so that zero is the year that the Comprehensive Poverty Reduction Strategy was enacted. And so you see the years after the strategy and before the strategy. The green line sort of fits the trend before strategies were enacted, and the orange line fits the trend after these strategies were enacted. In case it's not obvious, this is not a very promising graph for CPRS. It's basically showing that maybe CPRS even increased poverty. I can attest that this difference is not statistically significant. Roughly, the professional conclusion that I'm to draw from these numbers is that CPRS have not had a direct, at least on average, over all of the Canadian provinces, CPRS have not had. The effect that they have not had a direct impact on reducing poverty. If you look more closely, it's clear that for some provinces, poverty is definitely going down after CPRSs, and for other provinces, it's going up. These trends are more explicit when we look at child poverty, because there's a bit more variance in child poverty in Canada than overall poverty rates. Again, same kind of issue. No real difference between the two. No real average difference between the two, or what economists call an average treatment effect. But this one, it spreads things out a little bit more, and it's becoming increasingly clear when you look at it that there's really two clusters of provinces there. There's two where poverty seems to really be going up. This is Manitoba and Nova Scotia. Whereas in the other four provinces that have enacted comprehensive poverty reduction strategies, the trend is actually going down. Incidentally, these are the four provinces that the Daily Bread Food Bank highlights as provinces that have actually enacted targets and timelines. Manitoba and Nova Scotia are the two that haven't been as explicit about their goals. When we drop them from the lines that we're fitting, we start to see what's looking a heck of a lot more like the kind of effect that we hope that a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy should have on poverty. Typically, discontinuity, RDD, or the statistical technique that I'm using, is used with statistics or with data with a lot more observations. I really want to use it just to produce those graphs because I think that they're telling a useful summary of what's been going on in Canada. Not surprisingly, based on some of the things that I've already talked about, CPRS are very few in the sense that there's not that many provinces in our country, and there's a ton of diversity. In that sense, this type of statistical analysis is interesting, but not the final word on whether or not CPRS work or not. It seems that there is a bit of evidence, a bit of superficial evidence, that targets and timelines have done better, and also that there's more of an impact of CPRS on child poverty. The reason for why there's more impact on child poverty will become increasingly clear as I talk a little bit more detail about a couple of the comprehensive poverty reduction strategies that have been tried in Canada. At this stage, it's useful to hone in on one of these specific cases to better understand how a CPRS can work. So there's a couple of unique features of the Quebec poverty reduction efforts that are not represented in other provinces, but they've been committed to a greater extent in terms of will and money in Quebec than they have in other provinces. The first is a strong emphasis on activating working parents. That is providing things like affordable child care and generous parental leave to keep especially mothers in the labor force. There's also been an emphasis on making work pay. In Quebec, there's a real sense that if you work full-time, you shouldn't have to live in poverty. And so they are able to do this through a number of ways, partly by keeping the collective bargaining system bolstered, but also through what we call refundable tax credits for people with children, where basically it's income supplement. So you work X amount and you get a little bit more money. The primary goal of the Quebec poverty alleviation efforts was to reduce family poverty and ultimately child poverty. Earlier we talked about how a lot of provinces committed to reducing child poverty in the late 80s, but throughout the 90s there was a sense that people didn't understand that children lived in families and that the poverty of a child is the result of the poverty of their parents. And so in the last 15 to 20 years, Quebec has made a very conscientious effort to focus their poverty reduction efforts on parents. The green line is really the interesting line, the lines that are really interesting are the green line and the bottom lines. You see I have the four provinces from the book project that I've been working on, Quebec, Ontario, Alberta, and BC. But we also have Denmark, Netherlands, and France, and the United States in this graph. And I've shifted now. I'm using the provincial limb. There's a whole bunch of reasons for why I use that measure in this research, or why we used it in this research. I can talk about that later if anybody has any questions. It's a different poverty measure than the MBM. Although, for most of the provinces that we're interested in, the MBM and the provincial limb are actually fairly close to each other. The provincial limb is especially useful for international comparisons because we don't have MBMs for Denmark, Netherlands, France, and the United States. So evidently, at least in Canada, Quebec is doing relatively well in overall poverty, and Alberta is nearby. This is a useful graph because it also really nicely illustrates the sort of what I've been calling the three levels of, or what I've come to call the three levels of industrialized nations, the three different poverty levels. There tends to be clustering between 5 and 10%, between 10 and 5%, and then 15 and 20%. In the 15 to 20% range, you pretty much just have the United States and some continental countries. Some Mediterranean countries. Most of the continental countries, and especially the Scandinavian countries, tend to cluster more around 5%. Although, in recent years, some of them have been moving north to toward 10%. Canada is typically in the middle poverty range, between 10 and 15%, with other countries like the United Kingdom. But Quebec is towards the bottom of that range in overall poverty rates. Picking up on that theme of activation in CPRS, this is the graph showing labor force participation among women with children under 6 years old. You can see that in the 90s, before childcare, Quebec had actually relatively low participation rates for women with young children. But you can see that since then, they've skyrocketed to be quite a bit higher than the other provinces, even higher than Alberta and British Columbia, which are provinces that actually post, or sorry, even higher than Alberta, which is a province that actually posts very, very high participation rates overall, as Saskatchewan does as well, actually. But really the goal, or the target, or the focus of Quebec's poverty alleviation efforts were families. So it's really interesting to look at not overall poverty rates, but sort of isolate families from it and compare it to how they've done, to how other countries have done. And what we see is actually that when we just look at the families, which were the focus of the initiatives that Quebec has been taking over the last 15 years, that among two-parent families especially, Quebec has incredibly low poverty rates in this group that are competitive with the Scandinavian countries and continental countries. And that single parent, and the same is roughly similar with single parents. And this is reinforced when we look at this point about making work pay is reinforced when we look at families that are working full time. On the left side, we have dual earners, and on the right side, we have single earner, full-time equivalent. But again, Quebec is posting competitive rates internationally when we focus on the groups that they have aimed to help or support. So there's a few useful things to draw from the Quebec case. One is that we can reduce child poverty by reducing family poverty. And just generally, the Canadian provinces can post international competitive poverty levels. Sometimes there's this tendency to think, well, that's Europe and it's different. It's like, well, no, right now in Canada, Quebec, with families, with children, Quebec is posting rates that are comparable to Scandinavia. So broadly speaking, we're training this theme of whether CPRS is reducing poverty. The relationship between CPRS and poverty reduction is not one-to-one. CPRS do depend on what goes into them. Quebec has succeeded in reducing family poverty. Newfoundland and Labrador succeeded in reducing all poverty. Ontario reducing child poverty. But there have been provinces that have not been successful. It's interesting to think about this question of window dressing. Quebec was a province that, you know, you could argue that they always planned to enact these policies, and that the poverty policy was really just, or sorry, that the comprehensive poverty reduction strategy was just a media or something to bring attention to what they were already going to do, but that the actual CPRS didn't actually end up being an intervention that made any difference. You know, arguably, when we looked at some of those graphs earlier, the fortunes of Newfoundland and Ontario were already starting to look up before they enacted CPRS. Newfoundland, for example, they began to milk oil, which is a huge boost, which has been a huge boost to their economy. So touching on those themes, it's worth actually asking the question. This is where I sort of start bringing up this point about policy learning and the comprehensive poverty reduction strategy as a compass. Arguably, a well-designed CPRS aims to directly reduce poverty. We've seen some evidence of that. But another case that's made for comprehensive poverty reduction strategies is that they can indirectly create opportunities for policy learning. There's actually a blog post that I found after I already created the title of this presentation and began working on this paper, where I said the title of this blog post, and thanks to my friend Annie for pointing it out, is actually compass or window dressing. So it discusses, you know, they also use the word window dressing to talk about CPRS. And Renata Naughton, who is a professor of public policy in Ottawa, I can't remember which university off the top of my head, says at one point in her blog, says that once you have determined the destination, it is easier to prioritize actions and allocate the necessary funds to go to get on your way. So she sort of presents, she really stresses the point that CPRS could be an instrument for a compass or an instrument for policy. So just briefly, before I begin to close up, I want to talk a little bit about some of the opportunities that we've seen in terms of policy learning, explore whether there's been evidence of policy learning from the cases, from the comprehensive poverty reduction strategies that have been enacted. In Quebec, the Centre d'études sur la pauvreté exclusion sociale has released a number of reports. This is an organization that was set up independently of the government, made up of academics and civil servants, and nonprofit sector and civil society sector members to produce regular reports on the state of poverty in the province for various populations. They set some very clear goals and some very clear measures and indicators to track the state of poverty in the province. Newfoundland and Labrador has made effective use of their statistical agency. In fact, the agency produced its own market basket measure in Newfoundland. A Newfoundland and Labrador market basket measure that they've used to track poverty in their province. Over the last couple of years, four provinces, I mentioned before that four provinces are into their second comprehensive poverty reduction strategies. It's common at the beginning of that, of any one of those documents, to explain what was done in the previous strategy, talk about whether or not there's been any effort to to build on those successes and add new targets and new emphases to the poverty reduction initiatives that are happening. In the Quebec's case, partly because of the guidance of the SEP, the successes are very explicit. You know, this point that I was making earlier about extensive reductions in family poverty levels were well documented by SEP. But so too was the point that families without children are not faring as well in Quebec. In fact, families without children do about as well as families without children in other provinces. And so in their second comprehensive poverty reduction strategy in 2010, they make an explicit point of coming up with a few policies to directly affect individuals and couples without children. Manitoba, in their second comprehensive poverty reduction strategy, they claim a substantial decline in off-reserve Aboriginal poverty. It's interesting because it was never they never list that as a target, but they do claim success on it in their second comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. And they don't really have any emphasis. It's fairly convoluted. Remember, Manitoba didn't really have very much in the way of targets to begin with. Ontario focused on substantial declines in poverty, and then tack on 10 homelessness in their most recent comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. It's less clear than it is in Quebec how that's been added, but there's definitely been a sense that we've done better on child poverty, let's take on a new issue in the next comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. And then New Brunswick's comprehensive poverty reduction strategy efforts have been more convoluted, and there's been very little talk about the targets and timelines. In fact, the very first New Brunswick CPRS did include targets and timelines. They aimed to reduce poverty by, I can't remember what the exact percentage was, but it was by 2015. But in their most recent comprehensive poverty reduction strategy rollout, there's no mention of the targets and timelines that came out in the first one. And so New Brunswick seems to be suffering from a failure to actually commit to its targets and timelines and follow up on its targets and timelines, not to mention track its targets. Newfoundland has yet to release its second comprehensive poverty reduction strategy, even though it was one of the first provinces to enact a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. But they have done a fairly good job of tracking their poverty progress. This graph in particular is quite telling. It shows the fall in poverty that's taken place in Newfoundland over the last 10 years by all the different measures that are available, including the Newfoundland MBM, which is pretty low. But one of the really useful things is that, you know, moving forward, they've already begun to, even though they've made immense progress in Newfoundland and Labrador, they haven't been able to identify, the statistics agency has been able to identify groups that have not benefited as much. So one of the points that they actually mentioned is that extreme poverty, or groups that are in acute poverty, have tended to remain in extreme poverty at higher rates than the poor overall. And so moving forward, as Newfoundland begins thinking about its next comprehensive poverty reduction strategy, I'm sure that that's one of the things that they're going to want to look at, is what are we doing for extreme poverty, which is next level. So, in general, it has been a compass for some. Policy learning is taking place in the provinces of CPRS has been most successful, but it's not necessarily happening everywhere. Targets and timelines limit cherry picking, but they can also be ignored as they were in New Brunswick, where they appear to have been in New Brunswick. Independent oversight can take many forms and can help keep governments on track. I wonder if Manitoba will be able to jump around and cherry pick as much if they have a real independent oversight group tracking their CPRS efforts. Earlier I mentioned that comprehensive poverty reduction strategies can build bridges.
Actually, very close to being done.
I can speak of this more from experience. I'm not sure what the approach would be to researching this in particular, but I can speak from more personal experience with the poverty cost campaign in Saskatchewan. I can attest that through the poverty cost campaign and just getting people talking about comprehensive poverty reduction strategy in our province has resulted in some community groups that have felt shut out. Over recent years, have been having their first meeting with government in a very long time, and they're very happy to have that opportunity. I can also say that from conversations with ministers, that some of them feel frustrated that the government actions on poverty aren't generally recognized, that they haven't been. And then, you know, a CPRS might be an opportunity for them to bundle up those efforts and package it in a way that can be consumed by the general public and more readily understood. So in general, just talking about CPRS, not even having a CPRS, as far as I can tell, has been a real catalyst for creating dialogue in our province around poverty reduction. In ways that benefit all the different types of stakeholders.
Is it time for a CPRS in our province?
I haven't mentioned it already, although it's been implicit. Saskatchewan is one of only two provinces in Canada without a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy.
British Columbia is the other one.
Right now, in this province, I can say, based on conversations that I've had and conferences that I've been to and papers that I've read, government and business are very serious. They want to make the most of our province's human resources. Right now, we're really operating at capacity. We do have an incredible activation rate. Government is taking action on these issues. But there's a sense, at least when it comes to poverty, that it's not entirely clear what's going on or whether or not these things are really working or whether or not all the bases are being covered. A comprehensive poverty reduction strategy can really be useful in helping us evaluate whether these actions are contributing to the reduction of poverty. And maybe even more importantly from a government perspective, can showcase when they are. It's really nice to be the progressive conservatives in Newfoundland and say that we said in 2004 that we were going to reduce poverty in this province. We were going to take Newfoundland from being one of the most poor, one of the least poor provinces in Canada. And then being able to say 10 years later, that's exactly what we did, vote for us. The same can be said in Ontario, they've been using it very effectively to showcase their poverty reduction efforts.
A CPRS can help us build on our successes.
I know that right now Saskatchewan has relatively low poverty rates compared to some of the other provinces in our country. But I would love it for us to set new goals. For example, I think Saskatchewan could set the goal that Quebec has set in being not just having low poverty in Canada, but having some of the lowest poverty rates in the industrialized world. It's well within our grasp, especially during these times of economic prosperity. But in order to do this effectively, we need to be mindful of the experiences of other provinces. I hope this has come across a bit in my talk. CPRS with solid targets and timelines would be a great place to start. As a social scientist, I'm always into stress targets and timelines. But I hope I presented a little bit of evidence today that can really help things along. I'd also like to encourage investing in independent oversight to make sure that if we do put all this work into CPRS, that it really does produce results and that we're able to track those results and showcase those results. And I should mention that the health region has done some surveys to look at whether or not there's public support for poverty reduction strategy. And they found that 89% of Saskatoon residents are interested in this and support this type of initiative, which is quite an impressive consensus around the issue.
So just in closing, a couple of things to watch out for. We already mentioned before the poverty costs final report is coming out.
It'll be released next month. And keep an eye out for the book project that my colleagues and I are working on. It's under review right now, but I hope it'll come out in the next couple of years.
So thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure talking to CPRS today.